Welcome to Novo Ed Talks, where we reveal real-world strategies and expert insights from learning and development professionals. In every episode, we chat with practitioners, course designers, learning strategists, and business leads. We hear about their experiences in the learning industry and predictions for the profession and the trends that they're seeing. But before we get started, a little bit about Novo Ed. Founded at Stanford's Social Algorithms Lab in 2012, Novo Ed is a people-centric, capability-building platform that combines social and collaborative learning to drive performance readiness at scale. Through cohort-based experiences centered around human interaction, Novo Ed taps into collective wisdom, placing each learner at the center of perspective, application, and expertise. Large enterprises such as 3M, GE, Marriott International, and Nestle partner with Novo Ed to accelerate their critical initiatives, reconnect teams, and achieve rapid alignment through learning that is felt, experienced, and swiftly transformed into impact. Now, let's meet our guest for today's episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Novo Ed Talks podcast, a space for training trailblazers to get real. My name is Melissa Fisk. I am the producer of the Novo Ed Talks podcast. And today I am joined by Lee Wilmuth, who is the founder of Learn and Work and a facilitator and learning strategist. Lee is a human-centered learning designer, strategist, and facilitator. They partner with organizations experiencing change to develop holistic learning experiences that consider all the required elements: the business challenge, the performance challenge, learner needs, and what success looks like. Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Melissa. I'm happy to be here. Do you want to know a little bit more about me?
Please. Why don't you start off by just kind of introducing yourself, your role, and your company and your work?
Cool. Thank you. My name is Lee Wilmuth. I use they, them pronouns. I'm based in Portland, Oregon, on the West Coast of the United States. My background, as Melissa said, is in facilitation and learning strategy and human-centered design. So through my consultancy, Learn and Work, I focus on learning and development solutions for organizations experiencing some kind of change. I've really worked across many sectors, ranging from government to museums to big tech. I'm also a choreographer, a dancer, and a performer. And that experience has really served me well in my work facilitating with groups and other organizations.
I love that. I love when people combine like personal passions with their work. I feel
definitely
like both more powerful in so many ways.
Yes. Yes.
So obviously you work with all kinds of different organizations, like you mentioned, museums. That's really cool. Who are, and this could be different, from organization to organization, but, you know, in general, could you talk about some of who your learners are and what their biggest challenges are?
Yeah, I would say often my learners are facilitators, leaders, managers, decision makers of some kind, and amidst, right, like ongoing global conflicts, personal, professional pressures, complexities of life in general, I would say their biggest challenges are often based in developing more of an awareness and presence as a leader, leading with intention, supporting, again, the dynamic individuals and teams that they work with, and often just facing challenges around making sure that they feel equipped to navigate challenging strategic initiatives, coping with uncertainty, understanding how to work with productive conflict, difficult conversations, right? And really just them feeling like they have more flexibility and adaptability as leaders, decision makers. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of those things are very difficult, especially in a space that's constantly kind of evolving and changing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What would you say some of their biggest challenges are? You know, you mentioned kind of their understanding their awareness and presence like as a leader, but would you say some of those are in general some of the biggest challenges they're having, or would you expand upon that? And how are they kind of approaching?
Yeah. I would say for them, they are continuing to seek professional development, learning experiences that are really encouraging, developing them, being able to develop deeper awareness of themselves, having more presence as a leader so they can lead with that intention, be more strategic and dynamic as they are, again, facing some of these broader organizational changes to their industries as well, right? A big part of this is also being adaptable so that folks don't fail, right? Nimbleness is so important. And a huge part of being adaptive and nimble is also having a good sense of yourself as a leader. So self-awareness, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's great and so important. That's not something we've heard a lot of folks talk about, but I think is probably like at the core of anyone working with leadership development.
Absolutely.
It's incredibly important there.
Yes.
With the rise of remote work and virtual collaboration, how do you see these folks kind of adapting their approach to learning and development to ensure that their employees are equipped with the necessary skills for the digital workplace?
Yeah, I would say in terms of digital kind of tech growth, adaptation, obviously AI, you've probably heard about that a lot. So I won't even really go into that. You have other folks in your network who know a lot more about that than me. And for me, another big part of my practice and often what I'm working with learners on is methods, mindsets, behaviors related to human-centered design and how that does connect with technology and this very much the digital push that we're in with hybrid work, with remote work. So human-centered design or design thinking means that I really focus on developing solutions in service of people. And that's often in a co-design experience, right? With an organization, with leadership, we are trying to develop a solution that is going to meet the needs of their learners, of their clients, of their customers. And these methods really ensure that we are delivering in-person or virtual programs that really meet the needs of the learners that are going to be going through these experiences, that they are super effective and engaging and meet the needs of various audiences. One way that this often shows up in a virtual space is using a software, like a virtual whiteboard software that's like Mural or Miro. I use those softwares a lot, those platforms, in order to facilitate virtual synchronous learning experiences that are really collaborative, very engaging, and often are more human-centered, right? So in this digital time that we're in, I believe that it's super vital, especially more so now than ever, for us to keep that human touch, even if we are in a virtual space. So yeah, that's how I often approach that in my work, is using these software platforms that really allow us to still be highly collaborative.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something we're big on here at NovoEd, is just the human component of
absolutely
wherever you're bringing your programs.
Yes.
This next question, I feel like you could address either, you know, with the folks that you're working with or the folks that you're working with and the folks they're working with. But what, you know, how either do you or do you help them identify and address like skills gaps within their organizations?
Mm-hmm. Again, I go back to human-centered design. That's really important to me. So a lot of that is discovering kind of what those needs are, what the gaps are, right? So we often say in human-centered design, we move slow to move fast. So that looks like the discovery process. The really early phase of a project is about empathizing and listening and understanding. And that usually looks like interviews with various stakeholders. Ideally, if this is kind of about focusing on developing, right, a learning experience for some kind of internal team, ideally I'm meeting with those groups to understand what are your needs, you know, what's working, what's not working, where's some opportunity, bringing that back to leadership, some decision makers to say, hey, this is what we heard from your people. This is what they're looking for. Let's now understand a bit more about what strategic initiatives you have, really co-design this learning experience to then make sure we're developing and designing something that people actually need and asked for versus something that we think they want, right? The truth, the power really lies in the people. And the more that leadership can actually know about what their people need, better retention is going to be, I would absolutely argue, better revenue generation, all this kind of stuff, right? So the upfront cost, quote unquote, of spending time really discovering and interviewing and listening is going to propel and move your initiative along way faster and be way more impactful in the end. So often, again, using the mindsets, behaviors, methods of human-centered design to really identify those needs, those gaps are what I use in my work.
Yeah, absolutely. And so important too. Like, I think a lot of people jump right in and it's like, okay, let's do this and X, Y, and Z. And like, why isn't this effective? And it's like, they missed that whole step, right?
Where
it's
like
teaching them or implementing something that's not really like clicking with them or connecting with them.
Let's make sure we're framing up the right problem and really asking why it's this problem before we just start to build and make something. Yeah. And that costs a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and money.
Absolutely. How do you help these folks kind of currently measure the effectiveness of their programs? You know, you mentioned doing a lot of interviews and things like that. Do you carry that kind of through? Or are there like typical core KPIs that these folks are kind of using to measure?
That is so project dependent for me, just as an outside consultant, since I'm not working internally with one organization. That really depends on, frankly, how closely I end up working with internal decision makers and how close we stay in contact once my scope of work is wrapped up. I always feel very strongly that through Learn and Work, my consultancy, we leave our clients in a place where they are clear and empowered to continue on the work that we were doing together. And sometimes I don't always know about the impact of a certain project. I would also argue that all the methods that I'm using, all the approaches that I'm taking, can lead to definitely a lot of qualitative, really rich qualitative data, and quantitative data in terms of if we decide to do something that has a bit more of some specific data heavy metrics to it along the way, that also comes up. And that could look like, I don't really love surveys, to be honest, but that can look like surveys, that can look like developing and designing surveys, though, in collaboration and in really using, for example, for a recent client, which I'll probably end up talking about, they wanted to develop a survey, really getting at the core of measuring their internal values. And so we ended up developing a more quantitative survey based upon their internal five values that they have as a company, right? So I would argue that's the best way to really use a survey. Is to make sure that it fits, it's the fitting the purpose of your organization, right? Not using just some generic kind of standard catch-all survey out there. Being able to design anything and everything fit for your purposes is better than using something that's just more standardized. So, so short answer, it depends.
Absolutely. But let's get into the more into the long answer version of that. You just mentioned about that company measuring internal values. I'd love that to be an example of kind of like a case study of how you did that, if you wouldn't mind going a little more into detail around that.
Absolutely. Yeah. As I said, I've worked with a lot of different sectors, and one client who is like a government adjacent agency, and they're focused on patient advocacy work, which is really great. So awesome. And they brought me in for a couple phases of a project. So I'll just start kind of at phase one. They are a small government adjacent agency focused on patient advocacy, as I said. They were in a big time of organizational transformation, also shift in just how much they wanted to grow their organization. So navigating internal cultural issues and also just wanting to grow their team. So we began by doing like a real kind of needs analysis through human-centered design methods, all based around clarifying folks' competencies, their role, and their responsibilities, both current staff and future forecasting for the new hires they wanted to do. So did a lot of interviewing with internal teams, and then really worked with leadership to help them reveal and really help them identify what are these competencies for these future roles that they wanted to bring into the organization. Where do they fit in? What's your ideal candidate, right? What's going to work well about this role? What are you worried about for this role? What's some potential for this role? So through that process, we did that for everyone across the organization. That really set them up for success around refreshing and revising all of their job descriptions. That gave leadership a really clear understanding about how to have more well-informed performance review conversations, because they finally had a really clear understanding about people's competencies, right? About their scope of work. One thing that was coming up from leadership was that they were saying there was a lot of tension around these performance review conversations because people kept saying, that's not in my job description, or that's part of my job description. Why is somebody else doing that, right? So by laying the foundation of really doing this kind of almost more admin operational kind of work of let's get clear about competencies, roles, responsibilities for everyone at the organization and for folks who you want to bring in, that ended up having a huge ripple effect across more cultural tensions that they were having, particularly when it came to performance reviews. The survey that I mentioned that is based around a very quantitative survey that we developed that was all based around their five values that they had within an organization, that also got back to the heart of our current staff and our new hires really in alignment with the values that we have as an organization. Is this an opportunity for us to also refresh and iterate and evolve the values that we have internally? Because we want to be able to match that as an organization now. We're ready to do that. We're excited to do that. And with that, there's a lot of work that goes along with it. But this particular organization demonstrated so much willingness, openness, readiness to shift and evolve and change towards a better version of themselves because they had so much good data for what was not working anymore because of all the historical tensions that they had, right? So that can often be a catalyst for an organization to be finally ready to get to a better version of themselves is because they just can't handle it anymore. They can't handle, just the bad vibes that have been happening for so long.
Function, you know,
they're tired.
The dysfunction becomes such a blocker in like actually propelling like any kind of growth or movement.
Totally. So the labor, the work that comes along with change and transformation towards becoming a better version of yourself as an organization is worth it to them than staying in the dysfunction. Yeah, that they've historically been in, and I love working with clients at that juncture. Because I'm like, rad, awesome, you're ready, you know, like.
And you're aware.
And you're aware, right? And it's not going to be easy. It's going to take time. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. And it's such a joy for me to see clients reap the rewards of that labor working towards like becoming the best version of themselves. Yeah. Did that answer your question? Like kind of give you a cool.
No, that was a great, like great example, case study. But that is... And a really fun and unique one in that it's like, I feel like very progressive and not all companies would necessarily take that hard of a look internally and say, hey, we have this problem. Let's address it. And let's
absolutely
do that. So that's really, really awesome to hear.
Yeah.
What role does technology play in, well, you know, in your work with these groups? And then, you know, is it different for every type of group you work with, or are you seeing kind of like major trends with tools and platforms that people are using?
Again, for me, as I mentioned earlier, I use Mural pretty consistently for virtual facilitation. It's just so collaborative. There are so many different features that get folks engaged in a virtual workshop in a really playful, imaginative, delightful way, and it's pretty user-friendly. Miro is also really great. I just tend to use Mural more. So for me and my work, and then obviously like Zoom or something like that. So for a purely like virtual workshop facilitation, those are often the two platforms that I tend to be using. I don't work a lot in the LMS space, again, just because I'm not an internal L&D person. I've done some work with clients around that, but I don't claim to be an expert in the LMS space. And also, I don't do really any work with instructional design software. I leave all that up to those amazing experts too, in terms of building really like engaging online asynchronous learning experiences. So my sweet spot tends to be if it is a digital learning experience in that virtual but synchronous facilitation. And Mural tends to be the platform that I use the most and get the most out of.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, looking back, kind of thinking about the industry in general, and you know, where you've worked with all kinds of different organizations, have there been any kind of like key takeaways that you've seen over the past 5 years from doing this type of work?
Hybrid is life.
We
hybrid
heard
is life.
That
Yeah, like, and amen for that, honestly. I think that we need to be inclusive, accessible, emergent to our people's needs, right? And our people being our employees. And frankly, folks don't want to be in the office 24/7 or all the time. And I celebrate that. I think that we can still do really good work. And we don't have to be together all the time. And some people love to be together all the time. So this is why I say hybrid is life. Like, I just think that's the new normal and whatever normal means. So I think a lot of organizations and clients that I've worked with are really getting comfortable with accepting that hybrid learning, offering virtual options, offering in person, but getting to the reality of like a blended learning experience, right? This is going to be, it's now and it's the future. And I also think that that makes it a lot more accessible for folks living dynamic lives outside of work too. So that's something that I often see. And collaboration, right? Collaboration is super important. Despite all of the tech tools that are continuing to be integrated into our work, if we like it or not, at the end of the day, at least with my learners, it is such human work. It's so nuanced. We do our best work in collaboration often. And so I continue to see that being, frankly, prioritized as well, is how can we continue to get ourselves together in some capacity so that we can generate and innovate and become effective together versus alone.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And, you know, you kind of started talking about that, but, you know, is that kind of where you see the future of L&D going, or do you want to elaborate on that anymore with like what you see coming in the future?
Yeah, I would say that L&D is going to continue to be, I sound like a bit of a broken record, but about human development, right? We're so lucky in our work that we get to be at the forefront of how humans are learning. And for me, I think that is just going to be continue to actually become even more human, even more us being together in learning experiences versus us being apart. Or by making asynchronous learning, if you are apart, continue to have those human elements embedded in it. So again, I don't mean to sound like a broken record with this human thing.
No, I love it.
And that is where I really see L&D continuing to move towards in the future, because there's so much push right now for us to be less human that I think it's actually L&D's duty to continue to push humanness. And the more that we can get folks together learning, the more empowered we will be to develop solutions in service of people, to work towards innovation, to work towards inclusivity, and really build, effective learning experiences that actually impact change versus a checkbox.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I think that's such a beautiful kind of thing that is not is something that is kind of there, but not necessarily something that everyone always focuses on. It's like often can be like, oh, well, like these technologies or with, AI and everything is like fancy and great. And that's all great and going to be like wonderful in my opinion. But
Yes.
coming back to like what you're talking about, it's like the core aspect of just working together as humans.
Yeah.
It
And learning and
has to be at the
development,
core of that.
right? Like the L&D, the learning part, it's like, well, everything kind of comes back to, in you could argue that anything we design for is for a person, is for a human, right? So we design learning experiences for people. And the development part of L&D is human development, right? Like we're here to develop humans. And so I do, again, want to reinforce that I think it's our responsibility working in the L&D space to continue to be the leaders of like human development.
I love that. As a fun send off, and you can maybe you've already been giving all these great little nuggets of pieces of advice, which I've been loving. But as a fun send off, what advice would you give to those just stepping into a leadership role? You work with leaders very closely. Like, what would you advise them to do
I
as
think we don't talk about this enough in L&D. And I would really encourage more L&D leaders to educate themselves or get some professional development around human-centered design methods. Prototyping and testing, I think is so huge. And I feel like it's not used enough in learning and development. So what I mean by that is if you are someone who's stepping into a more of a leadership role in L&D, really getting comfortable playing around with prototyping a program or prototyping a workshop before launching something big. What is your minimal viable product, your MVP or minimal viable project that you could test out in a small way so you can iterate and get some feedback from your users, from your learners, before you design this huge program or this huge training or this huge initiative and then realize that maybe it fails. And failure's fine, right? We like to say failure, FAIL, is your first attempt in learning. But a nice way to do that without using a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and money, if you have a small budget, is to test and prototype something, right? And then you can go ahead and launch it once you have a bit more information up front. So I'm a big advocate for L&D leaders using more prototyping and testing in their work.
That's brilliant. It's something you hear about in software development all the time and in actual like products, but how many big corporations have put in tons of money into these programs
Tons.
without any like insight into whether or not they're going to connect with their folks or work for their folks?
Absolutely. And then it creates more buy-in from your learners too, because then they feel kind of b baked into the process. And that can create more engagement and participation and retention. So it's kind of a win-win.
No, I love that. That's so unique too. And what a great way to end this conversation, Lee. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
us.
you.
This has been such
Absolutely.
an in-depth and profound conversation. So thank you so much for sharing all your insights. You've got some great experience, and I think our listeners are really going to learn from that. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it. This was really fun.
Awesome. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in once again to the NovoEd Talks podcast.